This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Backspin Golf on a very special Sunday. Every backspin on Sunday is special, but this is very special because it is, after we get through with this other tournament that's going, not to belittle the RBC Canadian Open, not to belittle it, but as soon as it ends, it is officially U.S. Open week out at my home island. Most people can't say that. My home island of Long Island and Shinnecock, where the U.S. Open will be played this week. A lot of the people that have become very good friends of mine, some of them extremely close, are people that I have met over the years through social media or being guests on my daily show on ESPN Sports Radio. And we've never physically met. That is not the case with the guy that I'm about to spend some time with on Backspin today. We've actually been in the same room together a number of times, I know. It's kind of scary, but he obviously is a very good friend of mine. And even though he lives in South Carolina now, as does my brother Mitchie, so they have that in common. That's kind of weird. Two South Carolinians that I'm close to. Scott Hamilton is a very good friend, and we are going to talk. I can't wait to talk about this because the U.S. Open at Shinnecock is a, of all the courses in the Rota, there is actually no Rota. They play it all over the place. Shinnecock is a very special place, and Scott will explain exactly why, and he has firsthand knowledge of this. So here we go. Hello there, Scott Hamilton.
Hello, hello. Happy Sunday. Happy U.S. Open week.
Oh, this is so good. So good. There's a lot going on in the world of sports, as we know in general. But this week, not only to golfers that are insane about the game of golf, but casual golf fans too will be wrapped up this week in the U.S. Open. So let's start with you explaining to people about your knowledge, your fascination. Why are you making a face?
Fascination. I like that word.
Okay. Your fascination with Shinnecock and mostly as it pertains to the U.S. Open. I'm not talking about just a Saturday out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking about the U.S. Open. So take us back and explain to us your fascination with Shinnecock.
It was the first U.S. Open I ever covered, and it was historic for multiple reasons.
That's one.
Yeah. It's an historic course, first of all. It's a very secretive course. It's upper crust. It's only been held there five times, and it wasn't held there at all between 1896 and 1986. That's 90 years when Corey Pavin won 1986. Mm-hmm. Came back in 95. Ray Floyd wins it. And then it went nine more years. And the one that happened in 04. 04 was a seminal year for golf anyhow. Tiger didn't win any majors that year. It was one of his swing change eras. Phil, the emergence of Phil won the Masters that year. That was his first major. He and he almost won the U.S. Open. Remember, he had multiple. The U.S. Open's the one that got away. Six runners up finishes in the U.S. Open. It was just a cool year. I also went to a party that week that was attended by Paris Hilton and the Gotti Boys. So it was kind of cool. It was the first time I'd ever been to Long Island, like other than Queens. Or I mean, do you consider Queens and Brooklyn Long Island?
No.
I mean, it's physically part of it, though.
Physically, they are, but that's Long Island typically is Nassau and Suffolk counties when most people relate to Long Island.
So, yeah. So I flew into Islip, got my rental, and they hooked me up with a brand new Suburban, dude.
Nice.
It was, and my colleague, I was staying with Alan Blondin, who was the longtime golf writer at the Myrtle Beach Sun News. We, instead of staying in the media hotel, which was in Islip, we rented a house near the course. So we had about a 7-minute commute as to where the great unwashed masses of media had a 90-minute. They were showing movies on the bus. So we dodged that bullet. But quick story, though. But we go back to the house one night, had our own private pond and everything. I mean, we were so fortunate to score this house. But there was another building across the road. It's out in the country. I mean, to anybody who's never been to that part of the world. First of all, the Hamptons are, I'm trying to think of a Midway. It's Midway with money. wouldn't you agree that'd be as comparable? Or
with a lot of money.
With a lot, like yachts with helicopters.
No, this is, people have heard about, you're talking about the Hamptons.
Yeah, the Hamptons are very
people tiny. Have heard about the Hamptons on Long Island for various reasons. And by the way, the Hamptons is only 6 miles from Shinnecock, I think, maybe seven, something like that. It's right there.
It's right there where you have Southampton, East Hampton. Mm-hmm. Then it's, I think it's Montauk, maybe.
Yeah, or Montauk. No, Montauk is further out.
So we keep going to the house every night. And there was this building, and it looked like a funeral home, and it had this wooden fence. And we're like, what the hell is that? What is that? And then finally, one night, we drove by, and there were all these cars outside, limousines and all that. And I said, we're going to find out what's going on. And I go around to the back, and sure enough, by the dumpster, they got a guy checking for the door. They got velvet ropes. I'm like, the hell? What's going on? I gave him $100 to get us in. And I get in. The windows are all blacked out. But that's where I see like the pseudo C-list celebrities of Long Island. Paris Hilton was hot at that time. She had a reality show, but the Gotti Boys, they were doing their thing with their mom. But I'm like, this is the most Hamptons thing we've seen all week. And it was pretty cool. But I digress. The tournament.
No, this is good. This is what I want to hear.
$50 martini at a martini bar. I paid that in 2004 because I was stupid. I went to a party on a Native American reservation because the large Native American history there. And I think it might have been ESPN had put it together, or one of the promotion companies. It was on Saturday night, and they put up all these white circus tents. And you had to go through 3 security checkpoints to get in to make sure you were invited. And it was hilarious for 2 reasons. One, I'm walking in, and I literally bump into Max Kellerman. He bounces off of me and hits the ground. He wasn't looking. So I had to help. But 2, they've got all these bougie people there, like in dresses that cost more than my car. And they're lined up for the Port-a-Johns outside because those were the bathrooms. it was a wild week, man. Wild.
I like that visual, by the way. It's very funny. All right. So tell us a little bit about what it was like that week leading up to Thursday, leading up to the first round. What feelings were like.
Okay, there was a huge story going into it. The big story going into it was the return of David Duval. He had been out of the game for a few years. He lost his swing. Remember, David Duval was number one golfer in the world at one point. Right. Shot a 59. I mean, he was the guy. He was an unbelievable player. But he had demons that people could not understand. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, his brother died of cancer even after receiving David Duval's bone marrow. He couldn't save his brother. He had to live with that guilt. He saw his parents' marriage crumble because they couldn't save their son. Mm-hmm. And it was just, he had issues and he had lost his swing, which we've seen happen. I think of lots of Ian Baker Finch lost his swing when the British Open Championship and then lost his swing.
Yep.
So he loses his swing. He's out in the wilderness and he meets this woman and he falls in love with this woman and she has kids and he moves to Denver and he's living this isolated lifestyle. And the kids are like, we want to go play golf. We want to go play golf. So he's like, okay. So he starts playing golf with them and they're like fascinated and they're encouraging him and his game starts coming back. And he found his love for the game again. So he's like, I'm going to return. So he'd been gone for like 2.5 years and he returns at the US Open because he had, I guess, the exemption by virtue of being the Open champion.
Right.
So he has this press conference on Tuesday before his practice round and it was an hour. And the only sound in that room, and I wrote this in my column, the only sound in the room was the hum of the air conditioners in the back.
Wow.
As he took off, you know, remember he would wear those wraparound Oakleys and he took them off and, you know, he had the tan line, but you could see the tears. And it was like he revealed himself for the first time when he took off those glasses and he just opened his heart. And I've never seen anything like it. And it wrapped up and it was one of the few times you ever hear applause in a media center as he's wrapping up. You know, everybody stood up and applauded. I went around the back and I'm at there's a side staircase. He didn't go out the main entrance. So I went around to the side staircase because he was getting ready to play his practice round. And I looked at him and he comes out and he's up on top and he kind of nods at me. I nod back and he walks down the steps and he goes to the first tee. Huge crowd now, crowd lining the fairways. And he's got two familiar faces waiting on him to play with him. It was Davis Love and Fred Couples. And I'm like, man, this is cinema. This is unbelievable. So they hit their tee shots and David Duval steps up to hit his tee shot. He's hitting a 3-wood, mind you. And I'll be daggone if he didn't hook it and hit a spectator.
Oh. And see, is 22 years ago. So your memories, I remember the tournament kind of. I don't remember any. I'm sure we all knew about this back then.
Well,
but
you have to remember, I was getting paid to document this.
Yeah, no.
And it was such a seminal moment in my career, in my life. And
right.
My last line, the last line of my column, I remember it clearly. The last line of my column was, golf isn't a game of perfect and neither is life. And even David Duval deserves a mulligan.
Nice.
That was my last line. And he missed the
call. Wow. Who'd you steal that from?
I know, man. How about that? It's like that time you and Pia Zadora and
Here we go. Don't you ever bring up Pia Zadora to me again. Anyway, this is an inside joke, folks. All right. So before we get to you being at, I believe you said, the seventh hole?
Yes, Sunday.
On Sunday, and I want to hear about that. Tell people listening who don't really know what Shinnecock is like. Let's start off with Retief Goosen. To give you an idea of how difficult this golf course is in normal play. And then you have the U.S. Open, where, as we all know, they are setting this up where even par would be a great score to win a golf tournament. Give us that stat that you and I talked about in terms of score relation to par.
They have had the U.S. Open now in 2026. They have had the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills five times.
Mm-hmm.
Five times. And only five times has a golfer finished with a score of par or better. And it came twice, ironically, in 2004.
Yeah.
Two of those guys.
Right. But say that again. Five people.
Five people.
And in the field, I saw the number. There's like 500 and something guys played in the U.S. Opens at Shinnecock total. Five guys were at par or better.
Over between 1896 sixth in 2018 was the last time played there. Yeah, the right. five times it was played.
Yeah.
And two of those came ironically in 04.
And on the same, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it happened, and here it's ironic, and I'm trying to properly position this because what I saw on Sunday. First of all, we need to tell people this. Shinnecock is an incredibly difficult course. We've established that. It's not very long. I'm not sure what it's going to play this year. If Sean or someone would like to look that up, that'd be great. It played around 6950 in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
The course it's a links-style course, which technically links-style courses are only supposed to apply to courses that are literally on the ocean.
Right.
But you get my point. It's not like going out and you have trees like at Andover or somewhere, you know, or Idlewild. It has about 4-inch rough, and then it has waist-high fescue, which I'm trying to think of a proper way to describe fescue to somebody, but it's like a big weed.
High
a
big weeds.
Weed. Yeah. High weed. Waist-high.
Yeah.
Wide fairways, but then you got 4 inches of rough and then waist-high fescue. A lot of elevation changes. Crazy greens. But when you have that kind of layout, you're susceptible to being dried out. The wind whips and everything gets fast. So you pair that kind of track, which is innately difficult, with the USGA, the parent organization of the US Open, with its maniacal obsession to protect the sanctity of par, you're going to get a very difficult challenge. And what happened at Shinnecock went from being difficult to nearly impossible to actually embarrassing for both the organization and the golfers that were tasked with playing.
Mm-hmm.
It was the course, they lost the golf course. That's right. The best way to frame it.
By the way, Sean has let me know 74-40 is the yardage, which I find, thank you, Sean, I find hard to believe that it's that length now, even though we have guys hitting at 360 or whatever, because it is, the fairways are going to be narrow. That's 7,000 yards is tough enough. This is going to be, okay, go ahead, sorry.
And they're going to try to stick those greens.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
So they go into Sunday, and of course, Sunday is supposed to be the most difficult day. They're called championship pin setting, setup, and all that for a reason. They didn't water the course, really. They let it get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where the number 7 hole, and I want to make sure I get the yardage correct on this. I've jacked it up over the years. I want to say it was like 180, but it was a downhill 180, par 3. Golfers couldn't even stick an 8-iron on it. Nothing would stick. They were laying up into a bunker, a greenside bunker, just into the front, and hoping to like, and the pin is like right in front of the bunker. So they're hoping to, they'd hit it into the bunker and then try to chip out like with a spatula.
Yeah. Yeah.
And hope it sits. And it got to the point that after the first 8 groups, Kevin Stadler's group was the last one to play it. They started, it's called syringing the greens. They started watering the greens.
Right.
Now, tell me, if you're a golfer and you've already played through and, oh, now they're going to water the greens for the guys behind me. They were not happy, to say the least.
I don't even know how that's allowed.
It was like NASCAR on golf. Right. They were making up the rules as they went along.
Right, yeah.
And I sat out there for several hours before and after the syringing because that was going to be – I would write 2 stories a day. I would write about the round, and then I would find something else notable. And I knew that hole was going to be problematic, and I said, this is my column.
Mm-hmm.
The New Yorkers, your people.
Yes, they are.
Were booing the hole. They were throwing garbage at the hole. They were cursing the hole. F you, hole. Go to black hole. This went on for hours. Now, it's a hot day. It's humid out there.
Oh, boy.
People, I mean, it got out of control.
Perfect. Yeah.
And this will further illustrate my hot take that I'm going to deliver on your program that I hope you get on board with. What happened that day was the most overlooked immortal achievement by a golfer in history.
Wow.
Oh, I got wow. your attention. I got your attention, don't I?
Yeah.
Retief
Goosen. You also got about 5 minutes. So
Retief Goosen had 11 one putts that day.
How come nobody ever talks about this?
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew Lawrence. It was incredible. I've never seen anything like it. And I've spoken to some colleagues and other people who were there over the years. And I'm like, why do we not hear about this? And Retief Goosen's story in and of itself is fascinating. Dude was struck twice by lightning.
I love that guy. Yes, twice.
And I think there's something to it while he had calm hands. I mean, you can't take beta blockers on the PGA Tour because it calms you down. It's like taking steroids in baseball. You can't take beta blockers. It gives you calm hands. Retief Goosen had 11 one putts on a day when the average score was 78.7. I've still tried to wrap staggering. My mind around it. It's staggering. It's staggering. And he doesn't get enough credit for that accomplishment. And I know he wasn't flashy. He was so quiet. I mean, the dude was struck by lightning twice. He often looked like he was the lights were out sometimes.
Yeah.
But, we talked. But to do that on the biggest stage at the biggest moment on the most difficult course we've arguably ever seen. I'm going to throw that out there. Shinnick, there were so many lessons and indictments that followed Shinnecock in 04. It was just, I can go on and on about it. I will write a book someday about it. I will do that.
That would be, that's a great idea. And I will say this, you, as much as anybody, knows how narcissistic I am. There was a long period of time.
I wouldn't say that.
When people say, you know, if you could be a golfer, who would you be? For various reasons. There actually was a period of time after this when I said Retief Goosen every really? Time, because not only did he have an unbelievably beautiful swing, the guy was really good looking. He still is. He had the game. He was a U.S. Open champion. He was had a great accent because it's not like he was from, you know, wherever. Texas or somewhere.
He's South African.
He had a great accent. He was everything I wanted to be and couldn't. So I always loved that he, I know this is a startling admission that I'm making here.
That is the most random person.
Yeah.
I mean, but think about this, and this is going to back up. This is going to back up your point. I'm looking now, and I knew he had won two U.S. Opens. He also won at Southern Hills in 2001, which incredibly hot day as well, dried out. He finished second twice at the Masters. He finished tied for sixth at the PGA, and he finished tied for fifth twice at the Open Championship. This is all between 2002 and 2009. One, two, three. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer.
He had a great run there for that decade. Actually, I always loved that guy. Yeah.
Lightning twice.
Man. All right. this has been great. I can't wait to watch this week, and we'll talk maybe even next week. I don't ever do this, have guests on twice in a row, but I think this might happen. I'll talk to you about it before I let you go. Tell everybody where they can. You're involved in a lot of things right now. I don't know if you know that. Tell people where they can find you on social media. However,
well, I'm on X/Twitter at @Scott8Sports. I've got a podcast called Backport Sports, which is strictly SEC football. It also airs on the radio in Memphis on Saturday mornings. And then I have a daily radio show on the Game Network across South Carolina. Monday through Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. So,
and you got more stuff coming up too.
I grill. I can pair wine with cheeses. I can.
All right. I think watch that's Three's where Company. We'll end this. Yeah. I think this is where we'll end this. Thanks, pal. Have a great week. And we'll talk to you again on Backspin next week. Thanks, Scott.
Look forward to it, buddy.
Okay. See ya.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.
Welcome back. Here at our home course of Backspin Golf, which is Main Street in Lexington, it's not exactly the most picturesque golf course there is because it's a road. But I have been waiting to talk about another golf course that is, the choose your words, spectacular, amazing, magnificent. All of those apply. And I'm talking about Stonecrest Golf Course, which is out there in Prestonsburg, Kentucky, which if you're in Lexington, it's a couple hours, a little more than a couple hours from Lexington. And when we hear the term hidden gem, they're talking about Stonecrest. And it's my great pleasure to talk with Brad Reynolds, who I know a lot of people connected with golf courses. I'm not sure I know anybody that does all the things that Brad Reynolds does at Stonecrest. Hello, Brad.
How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for joining me. You got a little wry smile on your face when I said I don't know many people that do everything you do. Before, you are the superintendent and the CEO of Stonecrest Golf Course. That just word that right there, the title is amazing. Before we get to what you actually do, I want you to talk to, we have people listening all over the world, actually, in different countries and all over this country. I want you to give them just an idea of Stonecrest, which is, I don't even know where to begin. It's on the top of a mountain, for Lord's sake, in Appalachia, and it is one of the most magnificent places that you could ever see. So let's just start there.
Yeah, the golf course is actually built on a reclaimed mining site, which some of the local leaders had a vision of building this premier golf course using abandoned mine lands money. So I know that's been a hot topic in the past, but we won't get into that.
Okay.
But the repurpose of the land, it's really spectacular. Just some of the views that you have from, especially on like hole 13 through 14, which we touch a little bit on with our photo gallery and our on our website at stonecrestgolfcourse.com. But until you experience it yourself, a camera doesn't do it justice. Every hole has a spectacular view. I've had many people early on when they come, they'll be like, I didn't really get to play the golf course because I was too busy looking at the views instead of paying attention to what I was doing. So I tell everybody they got to play at least twice.
Yeah.
Once for the views and then once for the golf course.
Yeah. It's you mentioned the website, and again, it's stonecrestgolfcourse.com. And peeps listening, I'm telling you, if you go on there and click on photos, your jaw will drop at how beautiful it is. You know, one of the for years, one of my partners on Backspin and close friends of mine are the people at French Lick Resort, which is the tallest place in Indiana. And it's the same feeling when you get on hole and you go, you want to hit that ball or are you just going to stand there looking the whole day?
Right.
It is absolutely magnificent. There are a couple of things. I did some reading about you and the golf course. And there are so many interesting things. You touched on the reclaimed land from mining, and I wish we had a couple hours to talk about it. It's fascinating to me, but all the mining that was done in Appalachia, you know, decades ago, when that finally ended, there's a whole thing I want you to just touch on it, about bank mules.
Yeah.
This is fascinating to me. And the part they played on the golf course being designed with markers like that.
Yeah. Well, we used to have tee markers that looked like lumps of coal.
Mm-hmm.
And the manufacturer quit making those. So we were trying to figure out something to tie to the coal industry. You know, a little bit of our branding and what have you. Mm-hmm. So as we were doing our research, basically when we were looking at the history of the coal mines, they were using bank mules to haul the bogies of coal out of the mines in the early, you know, the 1800s and early 1900s before steam engines and all that was available. So that was mm-hmm. our little tie back to the coal industry by using a bank mule as a T mark and as our secondary logo.
Just amazing. The whole reading about the history of this place is, because I love history, it's fascinating to me, all of it. When the first pictures came out of the miners after steam engines happened and people started hearing about this area, all of it is amazing to me. All right, here's where I want to go with you now. As I said, superintendent and CEO, those two terms applied to a golf course are not usually put together.
Yeah.
At least I'm sure you've heard this. You may be the only person I know with that title or titles there.
Right.
You are.
They call me general manager, but basically runs
general manager.
Operation.
Right. Yeah. My bad. Not CEO, general manager. But you are, Stonecrest is located in Floyd County.
Correct.
And you are from Floyd County, grew up there,
yes.
Went to, you're a graduate of Eastern Kentucky University,
correct.
Which we love here in Lexington. Tell me a little about how you got to be where you are. And I'll say this too. David Hill is a really good friend of mine, bearded golfer.
Yeah, he's been here, done a couple, been here twice, I know of, and done a couple.
Well, I heard he did an interview with you that I listened to a little of it, and it was great. And you said in that interview that this place, Stonecrest, is the 13th golf course that you worked at?
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes. When I started in 1996 was the first year I ever worked on a golf course, which is a little 9-hole municipal course here while I was in high school. And then I left to go to college and actually was going into engineering, but couldn't find a job in Lexington at the time. So where I'd already worked two golf courses here locally during the summers, the only place that would hire me was a golf course, and Danny Snelling hired me at Lakeside Golf Course. He was a superintendent there at the time. So while I was in Lexington, I started working at Lakeside Golf Course, and then I actually found out that they actually had a turf program at Eastern and UK at the time. So I didn't know that program existed until I went to Lexington. So I switched from that and got into golf just because I love the game and love being outside. So that was how I got basically into the turf program at EKU. And just to name a few of them that I've worked at was, you know, I was at Griffin Gate for a couple years as a spray tech while I was in college. This is all while I was going to school.
Wow.
Then I was doing an internship during school too at Arlington, the university's course. I've worked at Cherry Blossom, Connemara, the Bull at Boone's Trace at the time. I think it's Boone's National now.
Yeah.
And then my first superintendent's gig was at Bardstown Country Club.
Oh.
Back in 2004, 2005, I think.
Wow.
And from there, just kept working my way up and worked at Rosewood in Lebanon for a little stint. And then I spent 6 years at Lincoln Homestead in Springfield, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then I came to Stonecrest in March of 2013. So I've been here 13 years now.
Wow.
Going on 14.
And I imagine that's amazing. And I imagine that in the 13 going on 14 years, you've seen some changes there. As a superintendent, I have enough trouble going to a golf course that's flat and very straightforward and thinking, I don't know how they do this. We're always grateful for superintendents. Thinking about a place like Stonecrest, which is 200 acres on top of a mountain, I can't even imagine how you do the things you do. What kind of do you have? You must have special problems on a golf course like Stonecrest.
The biggest issue that we have here compared to we'll call it a native soil.
Mm-hmm.
Golf course that is, you know, like any course in Lexington, there's few places that get into a little touchy, bad soil, native soil that's kind of rocky or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Everything here at Stonecrest was all reclaimed crushed rock from the where they basically put the mountain back.
Wow.
Then, during the original construction, they hauled enough material in to basically cap that rock with like 6 inches was the hope of topsoil that they dug off a riverbed here locally from a local area, local site.
Oh.
So a lot of that didn't get portrayed as an even surface everywhere. Because I always use the analogy of what it's trying to like grow grass here on top of this mountain is you could call your local sod company at your house and say, okay, I want 3-inch thick sod because I'm going to cover up my driveway and try to grow grass on concrete.
Oh.
So it's a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
But we make it through it for the most part relatively well with what we got to work with.
I always say this about places that I want people to know about. Just read the Google reviews. Look at some of the reviews from people who have been there. Yes. And hearing you talk about that, and knowing that people talk about how gorgeous the golf course is and how, you know, the greens are so great and this and all the things that make a destination golf course so impressive, Stonecrest has. Absolutely.
And we try to bring in the best experience for anyone that comes here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thrive on our customer service as we stress it more than anything. And then on our stay in place, we try to create the best experience possible for anyone that comes to Stonecrest.
Well, I was going to bring this up, but I want to talk for a minute about stay in play.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is one of the things on Backspin, and we have friends who have golf courses. We're doing things now where, you know, golf buddy trips are a big deal during the summer.
Yes.
And so you get a group of guys and they're going, where should we go? Should we go to Myrtle Beach? Should we do it? Well, if you want a real experience that combines an incredible golf course with magnificent views, you now have stay and play packages. So can you talk to us a little bit about those? Because that's something that people should really look into.
Yeah, we can accommodate up to 16 golfers at one time on site through the condos that we own. That we control. We've got 2 5-bedroom condos. It's got 8 beds in each one. They're about 3,000 square foot each. So it's a rather large condo townhome. And part of the experience is we keep your golf carts in the garage. So once you arrive, you park your car, then your entire time here, you just go out in your garage, get on your golf cart, come to the pro shop, check in, go to 1T, go hit the top tracer driving range if you want to, grab something at the grill, park your golf cart in the garage, and close her up for the evening. So we try to create where you, once you get here, you literally don't have to step foot in your vehicle until you leave, because you can ride your golf cart everywhere you want to go on top of the heap.
That is a great idea. There are different packages, and you'll put that together. And that's wonderful, too. You mentioned another great thing is this driving range that you have with Top Tracer, all the Top Tracer stuff now, which everybody knows. All you got to do is watch a golf tournament, and they say, Top Tracer brought to you by.
Yes, well, correct.
So you can do it for fun, or you can do it to try to become a better golfer while you're there.
Yes, it has everything. Well, if anyone has ever been to Top Golf, it is provided. Top Tracer is provided by Top Golf. They just call it Top Tracer Range.
Right.
And it is the exact same display games that is at Top Golf. So you have anything from your practice to where that you can log your every shot that you take with every single iron, and it stores all the data for you if you download the app. Then you have games for young kids, from Go Fish for the beginners, and then one that's got a little more challenge. There's Angry Birds. That's the fun side of it. Then you can play up to 45 golf courses that are preloaded on there. Like if you want to come play 18 holes, you can play a simulated round right there. And and all that is actually included in the stay and play packages. So that comes with it just by purchasing the package while you're here. And we even have, we tell a lot of people too, we built a new hole 3 years ago during the construction and the renovation, so everyone could play 18 holes while we were still working on the golf course. And that new par three is actually modeled after the Eden hole at St. Andrews. And so it's loaded on the Top Tracer too, so you can actually play the mirror image of that hole on Top Tracer before you actually play it. So it's pretty cool. Just
So that's so great. There are so many things to, I wish we had more time. There are so many things to go through with this. I'll say this again. If you go to stonecrestgolfcourse.com and just look around on there, first thing you do, click the photos and just, that's how you get an idea of how absolutely breathtaking this place is. It's a great golf course, and it's run by a great guy, and that's Brad. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, and I've been trying to get up there. I promise you, before this summer is out, I will be there, and I'll talk to you real soon. Thanks so much, Brad. Okay.
Thank you.
Another great addition. I know I'm biased, but another great addition of Backspin Golf. I'm so grateful to my guests, Scott Hamilton, of course, and to Brad Reynolds of Stonecrest Golf Course for joining me today. As soon as the Canadian Open finishes up today, it will officially be U.S. Open week out at Shinnecock. And how great to hear Scott talk about his experiences out at Shinnecock. So thanks to our incredible partners, the Woodford Club. Go to the woodfordclub.com and check all the things out that they have going on. Kentucky Golf Trail, that's kygolftrail.com. Again, amazing stuff going on with them. Lexington Parks and Rec for our great golf courses that we have here in Lexington. Next week, we will be live. It's on the Sunday of the U.S. Open from Shinnecock. Am I excited? Yeah, I am. Have a great week. We'll be back next Sunday with Backspin Golf. It's ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.